Sickies, this movie was a disappointment. All the Star Wars movies aside, this should have been a home run, slam dunk, hat trick rolled all into one. Han Solo, one of the best characters in Star Wars, and the movie ranked from good to blah. It should have been Avengers good, Empire good, above reproach and universally as loved as the Constitution and Washington's apple pie. But instead, it failed. It failed at the box office, failed as a film, and derailed Star Wars almost as bad as The Last Jedi. So who's responsible? Some might say it was the noble legion of Star Wars defenders, others call toxic fans. Some would say no advertising. Others would say it was the SJW agenda. I tend to believe it was the lizard wizards putting chemicals in the creator's Boku boxes. Don't believe me? Turn the frog gay, for God's sakes! Sickies, you heard my story. Let's listen to some experts at Sci-Fi Malady for their take. Let me warn you, though, if they don't mention the lizard wizards, we need to take the fight to them and defend him! Defend Star Wars! Make Star Wars great again!
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 108, Solo. You should have been good.
You should have been Solo.
Did we get a Rage Master rips a clip in the intro?
I think we got Rage Master watches Alex Jones on Joe Rogan or something.
I was getting for a pundit. I was going for pundit intro there.
I'm telling you, Nation, the psionic vampires are coming for Star Wars. It's a globalist agenda to ruin Star Wars, and it starts right with Star Wars.
Lizard now, wizards.
We got to sell some supplements right now. This is how we make our money here. This looks like a Mountain Dew can, but especially made for Sci-Fi Malady.
It will save your life. It will take toxins in the water out so you won't turn gay.
Rage-a-hall.
It's got stuff in here that you can only find in supernovas or trace amounts in blueberries.
Oh, I love how crazy it gets, man. Oh,
I want to know what crazy pills that guy takes every single day. I want them.
Can I try them?
It's an amazing life. I want the mushrooms that he's licking or the toads that he's licking before he goes on air.
It wouldn't be frogs.
The only media bigger in the nation is Drudge Report. You can go look at all the stats. No one's got more listeners or viewers than me except Drudge Report. Drudge Report? You pull something up. Drudge Report? I know it's big. Maybe I'm wrong. Drudge Report is... I can't get out of my Alex Jones impression right now. I keep wanting to fall back into it.
We all will say he's a little crazy. A lot crazy.
Okay, well, I had actually wanted to go into a discussion of why this was selected for Missed It March. Disclaimer here, if you've been listening lately and you don't know why we call him the Rage Master, there is a good chance you're going to find out tonight. And my wonderful girlfriend, Sarah, who's sleeping two rooms away, I'm sorry.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, the Rage Star Master Wars, may make an appearance tonight.
It's usually a touchy subject, and Mark and I have our own opinions on Star Wars and where the franchise is going. And
we can change everything.
It's possible that there's a punch thrown. No, I'm kidding. There'll be no punches thrown tonight.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. At least.
Let's hope not.
I wanted to go into why.
It'll be on Facebook Live if it happens.
That's true. Everyone
nerd fight.
If there's punches thrown,
stop it. D20, save first punch.
Well, I hate to tell you, as the GM,
rolling melee parry, you missed. Take the punch.
Hey, you guys didn't roll for initiative first, guys. You were doing it wrong.
Roll strength
points, man.
Well, thank God he rolled a 2. He barely hit me with a glancing blow. Didn't get through my socko. Now I'm crossing up my role playing games.
This is Star Wars, so we're doing D6 West End. That's the only good Star Wars game, sickies. The only good one. Edge of Empire I've never played, so I can't speak to it. But it's better than D20. Then again, this cardboard Darth Vader in front of me is better than D20.
Thank you, Mom, for the cardboard Darth Vader. I really like it, and that's why I added it to the table, despite Mark comparing it to crappy role-playing games.
I stand by my statement. D20 blows.
Okay.
Okay. So how was this a bomb? Why was this selected for Missed It March? Obviously, it's a bomb. There was a $275 million budget, one of the biggest budgets ever for the production of a film. To tell the story of Han Solo, one of the greatest fiction characters, one of the most popular fiction characters ever written, who has two things in his backstory that everybody who's only seen one episode of Star Wars, if you've only seen A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, you want two questions answered.
Yep.
How do you make the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs? Is it time or distance in the Star Wars universe? And two, you want to see the Sabacc game where he wins the Falcon from Lando.
Yeah. Yep.
You want to see those two things. This is a no-brainer. It's the second most profitable franchise in American film history behind the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. When you have to take 19 different films over the course of like 8 years in a phased cash cow production, release a movie every year or two every year to beat this franchise. Yes. The only thing closer, it's Harry Potter. It's Star Wars, and the only thing bigger is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, people. And that's a globalist agenda, and they're trying to shut Star Wars down. They're shutting Star Wars down because it's bigger than Harry Potter, and the only thing bigger is the Marvel Cinematic. I can't get rid of him. My head
needs to knock
it. Yes. But no, you're right. This is honestly a shock because it's huge. It's Star Wars. I mean, come on. It's Star Wars. How has it failed?
So this is how it's missed at March. It should be simple. Throw some stuff about young Han Solo, how he meets Chewie, show him make the Kessel Run, explain that a parsec is distance and how many black holes are in the area and you've got to jump around and it's total distance you travel in your jumps.
We're going to rip into Kessel Run. Okay. That was garbage.
And then show him winning the Falcon from Lando in that Sabacc game and make it epic and plant the seeds for why there's some back history beef between Han and Lando when they come to Cloud City in episode 5, but that they were friends. Explain that. Tell that tale. That's what you had to do. And what you came up with was something that you spent $275 million on the most established franchise in American film history with one of the most beloved characters ever. And it made $398 million worldwide, needed to make $500 million to break even. And it put all of the other standalone Star Wars movies on hold while they rethought the strategy of what was going on. If there is ever a movie that should have been more of a layup that turned into an exploding grenade, this is it.
Ron Howard, I don't know how much to blame you for this, but I would rest my laurels on all the other good stuff you did. Apollo 13. So the next time someone said, "What's on your resume?" I did Apollo 13. Oh, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
I would avoid the Solo part.
Well, I mean, this was the hand grenade that wasn't just a hand grenade. This thing blew up huge.
So I'm going to, before we get into rips and picks, let's talk about Ron Howard because it's going to be disagreement here. I don't blame Ron Howard for this. I can't blame Ron Howard for this movie because he had to reshoot something like 70% of it. Disney came in and fired the original two directors because they were under the mistaken belief that they were supposed to make a comedy. So now you have a lot of the problems that exist in this movie probably exist because you changed the director 70% of the way through the film. So now Ron Howard is basically reworking somebody else's film. And he's got to mesh his vision in with theirs, figure out what he can keep because the budget is already massive. You can't reshoot the entire film. He's got to turn a film that wasn't supposed to be a comedy, but 70% of it was filmed as a comedy into a finished product. That's a nightmare. The director is the unifying vision that pulls everything. The writing, the script, the acting, the cinematography, the casting, the writer pulls, the set design pulls all of that together.
I'm going
to score. Yeah. And you switch that out 70% through. So Ron Howard, what he really did was try to save somebody else's disaster.
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't throw this in his portfolio, but I can't lay the fault of a Star Wars story at Ron Howard's feet.
I am going to lay it 100% in Disney's lap because
that's more fair.
Because if you hire directors to do something, you should obviously go, "Hey guys, this is going to be a serious film. We're not doing a comedy." I mean, you didn't give them any direction?
Or maybe they told them to throw in some of the Marvel Cinematic Universe cheekiness because that's selling like hotcakes right now.
Well, they might have mentioned like Thor Ragnarok. Oh, okay, we can do that.
Okay, there's a difference between...
If this movie was Thor Ragnarok, that's a problem. This movie should have never been as funny or witty as a Guardian. It should never feel like a Guardians movie. It feels like it tried to be Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And you can't blame him either because, well, okay, you can.
You can blame him.
If there was a mistake, let me rephrase that. If there was a mistake, you can kind of understand that in so much as that, well, Rian Johnson tried to deliver a bunch of jokes that stalled. And so for them to say, well, you let Johnson make a bunch of delivered jokes and then you gave him a trilogy before the movie even came out. So I guess we got the green light.
Well, yeah, again, that's why I lay it. No matter how you really look at it, it's in Disney's lap why this failed.
I have no doubt that Disney got to the original two directors and said, add some comedy to this. Porgs. We want porgs.
Yeah.
And these guys took it as make Guardians of the Galaxy in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
Which is what they appeared to have tried to do.
Apparently.
A lot of this movie appears like it used that as its roadmap. But I will surprise you guys later before we head into Rips and Picks, which we're going to do right now where we just make fun of this movie. Later, I'm going to do a little bit of defending of this movie and the things that it got right, because there are things this movie gets right. But now, let's take a quick break. We'll get back on the other side here, reset, and get into tearing this bomb to shreds. Solo, a Star Wars story, the gift that keeps on giving, because movies, sometimes we don't have to look hard for things to rip on. Sometimes we've got to actually hunt for it because they're well-done films. In the case of Solo, a Star Wars story, we could probably do the next 50 minutes just ripping on this movie and nitpicking it to death if we wanted to about things that are wrong. And I'm going to kick us off right now.
Only 50 minutes?
50. Maybe 500 minutes.
Well, I'm like, dude, we have 2 hours worth of ripping on this thing.
What did you do to Corellia? Corellia is a core world. You don't have to do much digging in the expanded Star Wars universe. You don't have to do much research in the established canon Star Wars universe from the films. Corellia is a core world. It is not a rotting cesspool that is run by a crime lord. It might have an underbelly. It might have a criminal element to it, but this film makes Corellia look like it belongs in the wild territories outside of the Outer Rim, where the Empire is there to recruit people only and is taking a backseat to the crime cartels.
Scott, you're forgetting.
Terrible.
This is the same group of people that hire the same guy that thinks Vulcan needs to be 30 minutes away from Earth. So then, when you nuke the universe you're in, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Nothing's sacred.
Yeah, fair enough. But you are absolutely right, Scott. Then you look at this and go, the Empire has no control over this planet? What?
It's their major shipbuilding planet.
Yeah.
Almost the majority of the capital ships built in the Imperial Navy. Remember when Han says, I'm talking about the big ones built at Corellia.
Yeah.
The majority of the ships built in the Imperial Navy, the Star Destroyers are made at Corellia.
You'd think they would have a lot of Imperial, security and possibly a lot of influence over that planet. Nah.
Well, and see, here's the thing. Well, first of all, most of the Imperial ships were made by Senar Systems, not Corellia. But Corellia was a big part, though. However,
I'm sorry, I'm misinterpreting Han's statement when he says, I've outrun the big ones, built the Corellian ones. So he's talking about like the Corellian Corvette. What Leia's flying in A New Hope is a Corellian Corvette made on Corellia.
Yeah, but I mean, there's still, Corellia still produces for the Empire. But the point is, you have, Imperial security. Consider the when they're in the spaceport at the beginning. And Han is there with, what's her name, the Queen of Dragons.
Khaleesi.
And
Daenerys Targaryen. Daenerys Stormborn.
And so
the Breaker of Chains. The Mother of Dragons.
It continues for a while.
Another title. Blonde.
First of her
jumps
name.
Jumps into the thing. More titles to go.
The Unburnt.
Jakari. Whatever. You done? Okay. I didn't. Anyway, so they're running around in the starport, and so the Empire's there, and they're stopping everybody but the guys armed with guns and these giant monster dogs. So the Empire's control is tenuous?
It's a recruiting station.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's one of those, we need tension. Quick, we need to show that they're running. Quick, we need the Empire there. But we don't need them to do their jobs well. We need him to stop the guy who's picking his nose.
Yeah, this is set 10 years before A New Hope, which means it's set 8 years after Episode 3.
Yeah.
The iron-fisted empire that Palpatine has built.
Yeah.
Has done nothing.
Under his control.
Which, again, you're talking about
is
an empire.
Yeah. Tenuously in control of a major shipbuilding core world.
Which is actually a scumbucket now planet.
Well, so. Also, time out. We're also talking about him taking over for the Republic. It's not like he's built an empire out of nothing. A Republic existed with, you know, police and all this before. He just kind of put a new paint on it. So it's like
he took over.
How do you have this?
The man who has such tight-fisted control over a galactic empire that he's going to be able to marshal enough resources to build not one but two Death Stars in a 5-year time span doesn't have real control over a crime lord on one of his major capital shipbuilding worlds.
Yeah, on the core worlds again.
On a core world, not in the Outer Rim. Jabba the Hutt running Tatooine. But even Jabba stays out of the way of the Imperials on Tatooine.
Yeah.
But again, that's on the outer.
The Imperials winking to Jabba the Hutt's organization on Tatooine makes sense. Here, no. Now, look, we're really nerd nitpicking this film at that one right there. So we went deep there. We can move into some actual, like, anyone watching doesn't need to be into the Star Wars Expanded Universe rips. Oh, but
let me go there then.
Go on.
Oh, sorry. You got one?
Well, it's just a general. The nitpick that is, it's something that, Honest Trailers did, which completely refutes another review group of guys called Half in the Bag. Normally I like them, but they said, I didn't see a lot of fan service in this movie. Well, then you're not a Star Wars fan, because I could count at least 20 instances of fan service from just the, so you're the one that killed us, Aayla Secura, fan service. And then, of course, just the fact that they have to feel the need to list every little single detail of Han's life. Like, here's how he got his blaster. Didn't really need to know that. And it's just a series of unanswered questions.
Why is something missing in the front of the Falcon?
There is exactly the escape pod. Oh, look, that's how the Falcon. Wait a minute. There was an escape pod there? Or Han Solo. Oh, yeah. We all wanted to know how he got that name. Just saying that was his name given to him by his parents. That was no, we can't believe that. Or what's the other one? Chewie. Oh, yeah. We needed the backstory of why he's called Chewie. Yeah, we needed that. Or there was one more I'm thinking
how
of.
How old Chewie is. Yeah. Lando's helmet from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a million.
All sorts of things they just dropped.
Darth Maul.
Yeah. All sorts of stuff that just dropped. Well, Darth Maul's the worst of it all. But then there's all the minor ones that are like
dice that was never important that now are the most important thing.
Stuff they added that was never asked for. And it's like, and it's when you consider too, you know, he still has years of his life left. We would have bought that he just picked up the blaster along the way. That's one of those minor details that I don't need to see right now. But you stopped the action to go out of your way to say, this is why he's named Han Solo. Because having it given to him by his birth parents, no, we can't believe that.
So before we go to Thomas's rip, here's a problem that people inheriting franchises have. If they go do their own thing and they take it in a new direction and they don't throw any callbacks out there, the fans get angry and the fans get mad and it's not Star Wars enough or it's not Star Trek enough. You didn't use the right terminology. It doesn't feel right. So instead of just understanding the universe and figuring out how to craft the tale within that universe, they feel that they need to throw in all the fan service nostalgia callbacks that they can. So I said I really like Star Trek Discovery, and I do. But one of the things they've done this season is introduce Section 31 and then clearly show they have no idea what it is. It's Starfleet's super secret off-the-books intelligence program that is a complete rogue operation that even the Federation government president and the highest ranking military admirals don't know about. But in Discovery, they walk in and flip their special Starfleet badge and say, Section 31, out of the way. And everyone goes, oh, I got to move. So you don't understand that. So what I'm saying is these writers feel trapped, no matter what the franchise is, that the only way that they can solve the issue is to give everyone a nostalgia boner by throwing out as much terms as they can from the past and say, oh, look, see, we know your universe. We're one of you.
All right.
Well, Scott, if we're going to go there, that brings up my point.
Well, but Scott, you said in your toxic fan rant that these writers are also people that didn't clearly take the time to at least get somewhat familiar. So therefore, I don't feel bad for them. They aren't trapped because also, like I said, oh, great. They answered a question that no one like the escape pod. Who assumed there was an escape pod there? Nobody. Why are you? You can't say I feel trapped.
It's the over reliance on nostalgia is lazy writing. Thomas, you're dying to get in here. Yes. So,
well, my point kind of goes in with that because it's like they obviously didn't look into the basic ideas and lore of the universe when they went, hey, at some point after, you know, Han joins up and joins the, you know, fleet. Well, we got to make sure he's not in the starship, so we got to put him on the ground combat.
Yeah.
So we're going to then decide that the Empire, before the Rebels exist, really, is going to be, I guess, we don't even know who they're fighting, but they are going to be, again, the Empire, who has an iron grip on the universe and has the power to make two star massive structures in 5 years. Goes, yeah. We are going to somehow send out ground forces and get trapped in trench warfare.
Yeah, I know, right?
When you have Star Destroyers that can literally blow entire planets up. I mean, in the lore, they destroy planets by just bombarding them from space. You have AT-ATs. You have armored tanks. You got all this stuff. And somehow you run into trench warfare.
Which is weird, too, because it's almost like you want to go up to the, U.S. forces in Afghanistan and say, guys, you're doing it wrong. All those bunker busters and everything you were doing, nah.
You dig trenches. Yes. It's like, what on earth? This is a Star Wars universe. There is no trench warfare in the Star Wars universe. There was none because the technology doesn't allow it.
There was some in Clone Wars, and there was some in Empire, but the circumstances were decidedly different.
Yes, and they also explained it as two massive forces fighting, and like the planet either couldn't sustain space, or there was an equal force on space.
Yeah, there were naval forces preventing bombardment.
No movie about the future should be resorting to trench warfare. There's a reason we don't have trench warfare today.
Yeah.
As soon as you get
anything
air.
Yeah. Air power.
Mm-hmm. It's trench warfare is over. It doesn't work anymore.
Well, I mean, it's like the only reason why we even had World War One was old tactics running into new technology.
And really, literally. And air forces didn't really exist yet. Right. The biplane was not really going to overcome warfare.
At the time, planes were brand new and was used for recon more than anything else.
And even by the end of World War One, they had figured out with creeping barrages how to get through. And then that made them switch to defense in depth. But yeah, I mean, it's just laziness in tactical writing to go ahead and tell a trench warfare story. A lot of lazy writing. One of the things I said that you had two things you had to do in this movie to make it great. Tell us how Han Solo made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs and explain it. And make it awesome. And then clarify that it was distance and not time. You kind of did. Kind of told us that it is distance. And he shaved the 8 parsecs off of the route that everyone else does. By flying real close to the black hole. And his ship can do it because it has a powerful engine. Well, it really couldn't do it. He did it because he had some super fuel in his engine. And he did something insane.
Yeah.
But I still don't fully understand the Kessel Run.
Timeout.
It wasn't done very well.
No.
And it takes something that is hinted at being absolutely epic.
Yeah.
And makes it
stupid.
Yeah, it just wasn't. This is something that has to be done right. And all of a sudden, it makes no sense for Han to be bragging for the rest of his life that the ship made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs.
Okay, let's get into this. The Kessel Run is a tunnel.
That's, you know, that I'm glad you brought that up, Thomas. Basically, the whole Kessel Run to me looked like seventh grade Rage Master just learning how to write a Star Wars story, making it, because you have them going through a space tunnel because, and it's not a wormhole, it's just a space tunnel because
around it is debris and damage and asteroids. And
then when coming out of there, there's a Star Destroyer that just conveniently fits in and is heading towards them because
it's
there.
Yeah,
it's there because we need to have tension. So it's there. And then they escape into the storm clouds that exist there. I don't know how. And there's a space monster. Wait, what? Space monster?
Yep. Man,
who wrote this garbage? This is trash.
Yeah.
It was better. The books, the original canon books, Legends, explain the Kessel Run better in that there's still a black hole involved, but it's not in a space tunnel. And it's not with a space monster, and it's not any of that. I just don't know how they could have written something so.
I think the original books had to do with how good your nav computer was.
Exactly.
Yes. It was your nav computer, and there was a lot of debris and black holes and stuff that made it almost impossible because you had to do so many calculations and things changed.
Which, by the way, there's a couple more horrifying things here. But it actually makes sense with something they did in this movie, but it's horrifying.
Oh, yes.
L3 is sitting in the Falcon.
Forever.
L3 has been transferred, not to the Falcon, to the Falcon's nav computer.
Yeah.
It's kind of horrifying when you consider that L3 was fighting her whole life for equal rights for robots.
and now she's permanently enslaved.
To the Falcon's nav computer, calculating hyperspace jumps forever. But it also adds a horror. All I can keep thinking of is when C-3PO says, "I have no idea where your ship learned to communicate, but it is the most peculiar dialect."
Oh,
well, and
oh, dude, I forgot about that.
It's horrifying. She's like saying, "Help me! I'm stuck in this nav computer. Get me out!"
Like
that scene in Rick and Morty. This is not a dance.
I'm dying
in a nav computer.
Because when they wrote this, and when they wrote Empire, of course, L3 was not even thought of.
Yeah.
So it was just a line. But now they've added this without considering that. But two with L3.
They've also taken Hans and made him not so good of a pilot.
There's that. But also, her quote-unquote death is stupid and laughable. So wait, she gets shot up, and Lando has his little hold the body and cry over it speech. And the whole time I'm screaming, "Just rebuild her! They did it with C-3PO! Your dad, John Kasdan, writer, did the same thing with C-3PO! Just rebuild her! Did you forget that she's a droid?"
And then Lando,
yep,
for loving her so much,
slaves her.
And then loses the Falcon in a bet. And then doesn't even be like, "Hey, Han, can I get the love of my life back out of your computer before you take it?"
Well,
I got her soul, too. I won her soul in this bet as well.
Which, by the way, again, I understand the idea of playing cards for the thing because, again, it's in the lore. But we don't understand this card game.
You needed to explain Sabacc a little bit.
Yes, because
some exposition on Sabacc would have been appreciated.
If you had this green card, you would have what?
Because we don't have time for exposition. We're too busy trying to do other fans.
We had to spend all this time on the dice.
Yes,
you take the time out on the dice and explain Sabacc to me.
Yes,
that weren't added until the pre.
Trilogy. It is easy. You could have easily gotten a basic when he first sat down and was acting like he didn't know how to play. You could have given us a little information about this card game right then, like, "Oh, you lost because of this," or something, you know, just kind of playing along or something to at least let me understand where you lay these cards down.
A narration in Han's head as he's watching his own hand?
Something, so it's not this just, "I won." Obviously, because we are seeing a random selection of cards that make no sense.
Which, by the way, so does he or does he not know how to play Sabacc going into this?
He does. The first time when he sits down?
Yeah.
Yes, he knows.
Okay.
He was doing the basic hustle.
Okay.
Yeah, he knew. And the only reason why Lando won was because he cheated, and then...
Which, by the way, that's a really poor cut, isn't it? So they go from this space train robbery, which was dumb to begin with, They suddenly decide we need a ship. So then they just immediately cut to this other place. No, we're just going to cut right to it.
Well, Lando's conveniently on the planet.
Yes.
Well, exactly. In fact, that whole thing, let's get to that. So they want to catch the space train.
Which, by the way, is carrying the very rare resource and only guarded by three soldiers. Three
guards and then a couple probe droids. And then they fail. And then, wouldn't you know it, the bad guy Vision just happens to be in the neighborhood. Wow. You just really need to keep this going so everything just happens to be there. That's really lazy hack poor writing, too. Everything just happens to be there. Just like Spock just happens to be in the cave that Kirk happens to fall into, chased by a monster that just happens to be there. And Spock just happens to know that a torch will scare off the monster. And wouldn't you know it, Scotty just happens to be on the same planet and just happens to know how to get out of everything. That's a lot of happenstance.
Happens or logical?
Happens. Ooh. So, which goes back to the other point. Hyperfuel, huh? Clearly you needed this so you could justify episode 8. Because hyperfuel? Wow, Star Wars. You guys really just are working hard to negate everything you've set up. If hyperfuel is so rare, why are you building fleets and super star destroyers like that? Just send ships that are titanium rods going into planets. I mean, why? If it's so rare, how are you spending money on all these fleets and then ramming them into each other too? How are you making these world universe breaking story arcs and not going, wait.
Supplies.
If there's an oil embargo, we can't launch a tank invasion. Yeah, screw it. Just launch the tank invasion.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of issues with that, but okay. I'm sorry. You got a super rare resource that somehow starts the rebellion now? Because, again, now we find out the rebellion, which...
By the Marauders.
I'm not 100%, and you guys know probably, again, more about Star Wars than I do, so I'm going to defer to you.
Yep.
I thought the rebellion started at the end of basically, whatever...
Episode 3?
No, yes, episode 3. Not. Kind of. Where you got the senators starting to work against him and kind of working together to build up some kind of resistance in a way.
There were players, but they didn't actually start making moves until like 15 years
later. What happens is as the Republic falls, you have lots of regional rebellions and local rebellions and insurgency groups that are fighting against the Empire.
But by themselves cannot stand up.
And it's Bail Organa and Mon Mothma and Garm Bell Iblis, who you'll never hear in a movie ever.
No.
But you pull those three big groups together, except Bell Iblis kind of just decides he's going to leave on his own after a while anyway.
But he sticks with it.
Yeah, you pull those three major groups together, and then it starts to pull all the other groups into one Rebel Alliance.
Well, I was just wondering.
In fact, it was called the Corellian Treaty on top of it.
Okay, I was just wondering, because this whole thing was like, this is the start of the rebellion now? Is supposed to be Marauders. This small group of, 20 Marauders now is the...
I think you gotta... You just gotta put that in context of it's a... Rebel group.
Okay, that makes more sense, but the movie doesn't set it up like that. That's part of the problem. They are the core of the rebellion.
Which, by the way, they got to be able to do that because remember, at the end of episode 8, the resistance is 15 people in the hull of the Millennium Falcon. So we have to give hope that that's possible.
Yeah. All right. Point. So I have one more before I'm done, and I don't know how much you guys have more to rip on before I move into the things that are wrong with this movie from a critical standpoint.
There's a million. We've spent a lot of time
here. Done. Here's the other thing that I don't know if I can ever watch another Star Wars movie the same way again. I'm led to believe that Chewie is just eating his cellmates as soon as they throw him in there.
Yes.
He hasn't eaten in 3 days. Throw him some food. Chewie the cannibal.
One more thing.
Why his name is Chewie.
I got one more thanks to you bringing that up. How does Han know Chewbacca? How does he know Wookiee?
Yeah.
Wookiee is unspeakable by humans until this movie.
Yep. Yeah. Also, he knows a little Wookiee. Where did you pick up Wookiee? Where? Right.
Well, you can understand it, but you can't speak it until now.
Yes. Yeah. So this was another one kind of like Yoda being able to use the Force as a Force ghost. Up until that moment, Force ghost couldn't use the Force to interact in our world.
Oh, but now they can.
Now they can. And in this movie, up until this movie, you could understand Wookiee, but unless you were a Wookiee, you didn't have a voice vocal box cords or
right.
Yeah, vocal cords that could articulate it.
Well, and that's the funny, going back to my point, we're just going to keep breaking Star Wars because we don't care. Scott, there was one more that I thought was really neat you put in there about Lando and gambling. That I'm just looking at your list there, and I think it's funny. I want you to speak to it about doesn't understand how raising works.
Or it's actually calling. So Lando, yes. Han goes, I raise you, my ship. And or he read all of this, and he goes, Lando goes, I'm calling. He goes, what are you calling with? My ship against your ship. No, that's a raise. That is a raise, yes. Sir. If you called with your ship, that means you valued your ship versus what he threw in.
Yes.
You raised, and you have to hope that your ship is worth what he threw in and his ship.
Yes.
Which by that is a raise. And there should have been more discussion about the value of each ship versus the value in the pot.
Well, also
it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, because Han threw in Maul, and he also had the ship that, again, Lando went, that's a nice ship, which he didn't have, but it's supposed to be this really awesome ship. So it's like, that's got to be a lot of value he just threw in. And he's just like, yeah, my ship's worth it. Really?
It's a stock Corellian YT-1300. I know in this movie it's not, but in all their established canon, it's like it's like the Ford Taurus of the galaxy.
Yeah, but it's worth all that money.
I would call it the F-150.
Okay, it is the F-150 of the galaxy.
It's a hauler.
Yeah, that's it.
Speaking of which, we're going to take a quick break here, queue up one of our sponsors, and we'll come back on the other side and talk about what's wrong with this film from a critical standpoint.
You might never need to travel the stars. You might never need to complete the Kessel Run in fewer than 12 parsecs. That'd be a shame. I'm flying a YT-1300, 34.52 meters, and a Class 2.0 Avatar hyperdrive engine that says I can do whatever I want. I respect that. Taking the short way around those blockades? Thank you, Corellian Engineering. I've been flying the YT long before getting paid to smuggle. Not doing it to be cool or join a movement. I just liked it. And I can add whatever I want to it. That's freedom how I want it.
Can you add an escape pod between the front forks?
You trying to force a plot point or answer an unasked question?
Yeah.
Then do as freedom calls, Ron Howard.
I'm not Ron Howard.
That's only because you don't want it to be that way. The YT-1300, freedom and engineering.
What is wrong with this movie from a critical standpoint?
Oh boy.
A lot. A lot. Let's start with the fact that...
pacing's wrong?
Let's start with the fact of the cinematography.
Okay.
I adjusted the brightness and the tone on my phone when I was watching it because it's like somebody put a blue filter over everything.
I had my brightness on my phone maxed out to watch this.
It goes from shades of let's put a blue filter over everything to let's put black. A brown filter over everything to a gray filter over. This isn't even film noir. It makes it impossible to watch the film.
Yeah.
Everyone's in shadows.
And then they
out of focus.
They also went into like some weird flares and yellows, and it's just like, pick a color scheme.
I miss the days of a J.J. Abrams lens flare, but at least being bright. I know that the trend in filming now is for everything to be dark and gritty. I would like to see the movie.
Yes.
Can I please see the movie?
There was one point where they were sitting in the cockpit or whatever talking and, what's her name, is back in behind looking in. I could barely see she was there. I'm like, I know she's supposed to be there. I'm squinting, trying to see her. I finally saw the shadow outline. I'm like, use some light.
you know, it's funny that you said, what's her name? Because I see Scott's point here about forgettable. Yeah, except for Han, who we knew, and Lando, who we knew, and L3, who just sometimes gets really obnoxious with her droid rights, we are sentient speech. You kind of forget everybody else in this movie. You just think that you're just going, huh?
Her name is Kira, but I can't remember who the rest of these guys are. The big crime boss played by Vision. He's just Vision.
Vision
does a great job in that role, by the way, too. Yes. Vision is fantastic.
Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
But you remember him as Woody Harrelson. Wait. It's, man, forget it. He's Woody Harrelson.
The laser spinning gun guy there.
Yeah, that's Discount Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
Yeah. Who dies.
Which is absolutely trying to be Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
And gets killed early on.
Yep.
The other
You meet him and he dies, and you also meet
Woody Harrelson's girlfriend who dies.
Who sacrifices herself. Doesn't even die. Sacrifices herself worthlessly.
It's just a lot of things in this are just plain.
Plus, I'm supposed to feel really bad for Woody Harrelson, and I'm supposed to feel really bad for the sacrifice here. And then I've got to step back and go, these are a bunch of jerks stealing hyperfuel for profit.
Yep.
Blowing up a train. These are the bad guys.
Yeah. Yes.
These aren't criminals doing something. This isn't like Han Solo in the later movies, who's a rogue but doing things for a good reason. This isn't a crime for a better purpose and ends justify the means thing. I'm stealing for profit.
Yep.
This is one bully beating up another bully, and you're just off to the side going, right. Well, I mean,
yeah,
right.
Which, by the way, he had a chance of walking away scot-free and not having to do this whole extra bit. And he goes, no, I'm sticking with.
But he has to be a pilot. He's going to be a pilot. Something he reminds you only 20 times in this whole movie.
Ugh. This is like you see John Wayne Gacy and Ted Bundy fighting to the death, and you're sitting there going,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, hit them. Kill each other.
Yeah, I'm rooting for neither of you.
I'm kind of hoping you both take each other out.
Right. Yes. And then at the end, like, they sacrifice them. What? No. I can't feel bad here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and also, by the way, at the end you find out the criminal organization is working with what?
With Darth Maul? Yeah.
Yes.
We got to have him in there.
Is Kira a Sith in training?
Well, it comes out of left field. Oh yeah. Boy, probably thanks to.
It'll be the next
mouse
book.
Is probably going to do that. The mouse is going to do
it's
that.
It's a book. Yeah, probably be a book.
Yep.
Darth Maul's secret apprentice.
Well, yep. And, you know, that goes off to your next point. The lack of a real antagonist. Well,
who's the bad?
It starts off with the Empire. No, wait. It starts off with Caterpillar, late crime lord, but she's gone.
She's also like a vampire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sunlight vampire can kill
her. The vampire underwater.
But then she gets killed. Then it's the Empire. Then it's Vision. Then it goes back to the Kessel Run slavers. Then it goes back to Vision.
Then it's Woody Harrelson.
Then it's Woody Harrelson. Then it's the Marauders. Then it stops. Then it's Lando, kind of, sort of. And we end with Darth Maul.
Kira.
Yeah.
Kira.
She's,
and Darth Maul.
And Kira pulls a switcheroo.
Oh, that's the other thing. Kira switches her ideas about four times in this movie. It really just turns into, do you guys have a coherent story?
Well, here's the other problem. Honestly, everyone is backstabbing everyone. There was no time when no one's backstabbing one another.
Exactly.
And you even think, oh, Han is going to be above this. No, he isn't. He shoots first. Yes, I said it. He shot first.
Well, it's the only smart move of the film.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm still going, okay, this is the only time he's crossed or he did anything. It's like,
which goes back to the point. So if there's no bad guy that's clear, well, who's the good guy? We know it should be Han, but
it's supposed to be Han Solo's story. I mean, I can't even say Chewie's the good guy. He's eating his face at the beginning of the film.
Well, also Chewie's not. We find out he's not that great either. I mean, he saves his buddies and then leaves them, and
you know what?
It's like, I don't know who's the good guy.
You know what? The stormtroopers that had him in the cell were pretty dumb too. they're bashing the cage open, and the guys are just like, duh, what do you suppose that is?
Also, let's be honest, we are talking about some pretty dumb stormtroopers. Well, they aren't even stormtroopers. Time out. That's the army. Remember, the stormtroopers...
No, the stormtroopers were guarding the cage, but...
No. The Remember, stormtroopers are like the Marines in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah,
this was the army.
No, they were guarding Chewie's cage at the beginning.
I don't think that's what Thomas is saying. You've got Marines, not army soldiers in this case, doing this role.
Yeah. It's like, I'm saying, like, this was just weird in that position. Like, why is the...
I see.
Yeah, it's like, wait, what? What?
Because stormtroopers are cool.
There's nothing thought out in this. So I think what they... Like, the pitch has to be, what if Han Solo goes on a train heist with Woody Harrelson?
Yeah.
And they've got to get the money back to Vision.
Yeah.
And he's tied up with a crime syndicate. And his girlfriend double-crosses him at the end after the last double-cross, and somehow we introduce Lando.
Yeah.
And then by the
run with it.
Darth Maul shows up at the end so we can plug Clone Wars cartoon, the last series, the last season.
Yeah. Also, you got to throw in that somehow she's had a dark past since you left her, and somehow she's double-crossed before, and now she's double-crossing now. And by the time it's over, my head was spinning. I didn't understand who the good guy, the bad guy was. And I'm just sitting there doing the entire thing going, huh? And also rolling my eyes half the time at the fan service and going, oh, so that pistol Han has, which is his cool pistol, he just got handed it. And now he's carrying it.
There's just too much attempted fan service. It's kind of like, you know what it reminds me of? Years ago, there was that movie Better Off Dead, where there's a French exchange student living with somebody, and she's invited to dinner where the mom goes out of her way to make everything French and announce it in the most obnoxious way. We're having French dressing with French bread, and it's going to be with French fries. Do you know Christmas? What is it? It's Noel in French. You're treating me like I'm that stupid.
Yeah.
I think the other problem with this movie, the big problem with this movie, is the pacing. At times, it's a very fast-paced movie, but it's uneven. It drags. The transition between the acts is bad.
It's just cuts. That's it. It
like
jumps.
Star Wars A New Hope, it's been said many times, is saved in the editing. And if you look at the film the way George Lucas originally wanted to edit it up and put it together, it would have been a nightmare.
Yeah.
This film needed someone to come in and re-edit it and make sense of it, and it didn't happen. This film has... Star Wars A New Hope is multiple stories in one, okay? You start off with... I mean, it almost feels like the movie should end when they get off the Death Star, but then somebody said, let's tack on this extra 40-minute version of this film.
Yeah.
And in this way, Solo feels kind of that way, too, except it feels like they told three times the movie should have ended.
Oh, please,
and then
at least.
The pacing is bad, and it takes you out of it, and there are times that this movie absolutely just slows down to a crawl.
There's times when it's crawling, there's other times when it's fast, and I think it's fast when it needs to be slow sometimes, and it's slow when it needs to be fast sometimes. It's just like...
And then you never know what you're escalating towards. So in that first train heist, you know that the plot is escalating to a resolution, but you don't know what.
Right.
Nor do you care by the time it's over.
Then in the second part, you know it's escalating to what? Them getting out of their debt to Black Vision? Dawn?
Black Dawn. That's the new group.
Okay.
They couldn't do Black Sun, so they did Black Dawn.
So then you get to... Is he supposed to be a stand-in for Prince Shizor?
Who knows?
At any rate,
which, by the way, also he somehow stabs the
regional governor.
Yeah, it's like,
and gets away with it again.
What?
The Empire is pretty weak.
He stabbed a Moff, because in Star Wars, governor is Moff.
Yeah,
no, it's not. It's different, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, you stabbed a high Imperial official. Moff oversees a sector. Governor is a planet.
That's right. That's right. And then Grand Moff oversees sectors.
You stabbed
sectors.
A high Imperial noble. Right. And basically got away with it.
Right.
What? Yeah.
I thought he said a regional governor, so I thought that would be a Moff.
Well, if he said regional governor, that would be Moff. Yes.
Yeah.
In which case, Tarkin, you just called Tarkin on you. And by the way, just to give you an idea about Tarkin, if you're only a casual Star Wars fan,
he's awesome.
He's famous for the Gorman Massacre. That is, there was a gigantic protest to the Empire, so he just landed his ship on the protesters.
Yeah.
He just said, land on them.
Even Vader is slightly deferential to Tarkin.
Yeah.
Remember, in A New Hope, Tarkin tells Vader enough, and Vader ain't listens.
Yes. It's like, as you wish.
Well, Tarkin, when you actually look into the lore, and you know more than I do, but I've looked into it, and it's like, Tarkin is, wow.
He's no one to trifle with. And so if Tarkin found out you killed a governor, a regional governor, yeah. he'd be like, well, Vision's going to suffer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Thrawn, I mean, and kind of Tarkin and Thrawn had, you know.
Thrawn wasn't around yet, but Tarkin was.
Well, it depends which canon you're in, because
that's true.
If you're talking about the new canon in that Timothy Zahn wrote, he's around.
He is around in the new canon.
So, all right. So let's move on to something here. And I think Rage Master, you're going to agree with this one. I think this film is hurt by not having a mythological component, and specifically, it's hurt by not having any interplay with the Force and a good versus evil vibe to this. It's really evil versus evil for survival. Yep. There's no good guy in this film. Daenerys Targaryen tries to tell you flat out to the camera, you're the good guy. But Han and Han goes, I'm not the good guy. And it's supposed to be a hint to who he is in the future. And she's the only one who knows that's who he really is. And he doesn't even know it. But there's no, the Empire, in every Star Wars film, the Empire is the bad guy, or the First Order. Whoever's filling the role of the Empire is the bad guy. And you always had a good versus evil, light versus dark side plot here. It was either Jedi, Sith, Empire, Alliance, whatever it was a clear good and bad.
Yes.
And like Rogue One, which suffered from this, at least then you still had Empire and Alliance.
Yeah, you had a good and bad guy.
There's no mythology here. And it's a James Bond meets Ocean's 11 film.
Well, that's
in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah. I will be honest, it doesn't feel like a Star Wars movie for that reason.
No, it does. I would say
it doesn't have the mythology. It doesn't have good versus evil. It's just meh.
Well, and that's, they were trying to add certain things that didn't really involve mythology. You know, so you had L3 in there with droid rights. We are sentient. Droid rights. We are sentient. Well, so is this about that? Or are we just jamming that in there? Because pick a theme here. Either you're trying to make a civil rights type message, or you're trying to tell the good and evil myth. And that's what you have to make that decision of. You trying to jam the two together doesn't fit neatly. I'm not saying it could never be done. I don't know how personally, but it cannot be done as clumsily as they did it.
Well, and you didn't make a commitment to it. If you were really trying to send a message about equal rights for any oppressed class, and if you were really trying to send a message about transsexual rights with Lando and L3,
should have been a more central theme.
It should have been, and you should have developed it. You shouldn't have played it off to where we're wondering, was that a bad joke? Or does that even involve L3 and Lando? Or what is L3 really fighting for? Is she fighting for droid rights? Is this a slavery allegory going on here? Is this a transsexual rights allegory analogy going on here? What is she a stand-in for? I don't know, because you didn't take the time to develop it. It's almost like you threw some platitudes out there and said, see, we did our progressive social thing. Yeah. No, you didn't.
Well, this
you
is,
didn't
yeah.
at all.
This
you didn't have point. A discussion. Because you didn't want to interrupt your train heist movie.
This is my point about the card game. It goes back to this. They don't develop the stuff they need to develop. You don't tell me how the card game works. You don't develop, you know, L3 into whatever you want L3 to be a stand-in for. You just throw a bunch of storylines at me and go, train heist, you know, running from spaceship. We're just throwing a few things at you and hope something sticks. It didn't.
Yeah.
All right, we're not going to be balanced here, because we got about 15 minutes to wrap this whole thing up, and that might be pushing it. But
there were a few things.
Let's do some things that it does right. I don't know about you guys, but I do feel like, even though it was a train heist story and it missed the mythological good versus evil thing, if you told a train heist story in the Star Wars universe, it looked like it belonged and sounded like it belonged in the Star Wars universe.
Okay.
Massacre of Corellia and turning it into an Outer Rim dump.
I mean, the train heist looked dumb to me. It looked like they were trying to go way over the top.
Yeah,
they were.
That's just me.
But the majority of it to me looked like
it
fits the Star Wars universe.
There was lasers and it looked and sounded Star Wars-ish.
The Imperial uniforms were correct. You didn't reimagine the Imperial uniforms like another franchise. Or you didn't, this is what a Wookiee looks like now. Oh, really? He does. When did he get that armored chest plate? Yeah. When did the Wookiee grow a shell?
That's not at all towards Star Trek.
Why do Wookiees no longer have fur? Why is Chewie rocking a mohawk? So at least you kept the feel of this universe correct. I will give them that. The chemistry between Han and Chewbacca.
That was pretty good.
It was good. Yeah.
It fits. The bond between Han and the Falcon. Not because his dad made them. Please have put that on the cutting room floor. I don't need that. But there's clearly a Han sitting in the Falcon. It's right.
Yeah.
The casting for the actor of Han.
Yes.
Is right.
Yes.
He looked the part, I guess.
I believe him as a young Han Solo. I believe the writing of this character is a young Han Solo. He's going to take the risk. He turns straight towards the danger, faces it head on.
I mean, even the casting for Lando, I think, was good. Like, if you're going to pick the two main characters, let's be honest, you know, is going to be Han and Lando in this movie. And I think the casting for both of those were good.
I like Lando's casting better than Han's, but
Lando's casting was fantastic. Oh, and absolutely. Ultimately, it was very well played. And I believe him as a young Lando Calrissian. And there has to be a character arc because we know something has to happen from Lando then to now, because that's where Han says, look at you, respectable. And you see the change that here's Lando Calrissian, legitimate businessman.
Yep.
And the last time you're supposed to, I gather that Han and Lando hadn't seen each other in forever. And it makes sense. It also makes sense why I think it does a good job of cementing that backstory between Han and Lando. I think when Han tells Chewie, I'm sure he's forgotten all about that by now. It kind of makes sense if you're thinking back to this, where the Falcons crashed up on the shore and that didn't go over so well. And last time he showed up, he got screwed over, basically. I mean, Lando got screwed.
Well, I mean, honestly, you look at this and go, it works. I mean, those two working off of each other, and it's good casting, and it works to get the stories there. I mean, it's not perfect, but they do at least get you there.
Surprise Scott's deep meaning segment.
What, you found what deep meaning?
It's not deep meaning, but I'm going to go with a deep tie-in and backstory here.
Okay.
So, this is supposed to be the prequel for Han Solo, and it's supposed to tell me and explain why Han Solo is the person he is and is the guy we see on film. Most of the time, Han Solo is a rogue, and a rogue in the truest sense of the word. He's not committed to a woman. He's not committed to a career. He's not committed to a cause. The only person that he's committed to is Chewbacca. The only other thing that he's committed to is the Falcon. And he is going to go it alone. He doesn't want any entanglements. He doesn't want to take on passengers. He doesn't want to join the rebellion. For a man to go that rogue and isolate himself from everything is someone who has been hurt, someone who has been betrayed on a level that they never want to trust anyone ever again. And what the man we see in A New Hope and even in Empire is someone who, over the course of time, has come to realize that there are only three things that he can rely upon: his own skill, his friend Chewbacca, and that the Falcon will do what he tells it to do. And it all makes sense if the one person that he truly loved, and I believe Han truly loves Kira, and everything he was doing in this film is for Kira, and he's betrayed by her. That's the betrayal. He thinks he finds a mentor in Woody Harrelson. And he thinks that he's found someone who's going to teach him. He thinks he sees good in this person. He can trust this person. And everyone in this film, Lando betrays him. Woody Harrelson betrays him. Kira betrays him. And Kira's the toughest cut of them all. And it explains why he doesn't want to join the rebellion. It explains why in Empire, he looks at Leia and says, well, that bounty hunter we ran into on blah, blah, blah. Well, remember what Woody Harrelson tells him. If they see you with me, you're in it for life. And Han's, it kind of would make sense if Han's saying, well, I can live this life, but I'm not going to bring Leia into this life. I can live this life, I'm not going to bring Luke into this life. But it also makes sense why he comes back. Because Kira says, you are the good guy. And that person is still there buried under all of that shell. And when he sees that Luke is truly who he appears to be, he can't let Luke face that on his own.
Okay, I'm going to actually say something going along with you. I mean, 7 and 8. Not the best films ever. But this does go a ways to explaining why on Earth Han leaves Leia. Those two split up. It kind of explains some of that. Because honestly, without seeing this, just going watching 7 and 8, I was very confused on why on Earth that was like, why on Earth Han's and, you know, it's like, come on, those two seem perfect together. Seeing this kind of explains a little more of that. You go, betrayed, love, it makes a little more sense. Doesn't perfect, but does make a little more sense.
I think it does a great job of explaining how you get to this wounded rogue who won't sign on with anybody and won't trust anybody and is only believing in himself. I think it does a great job there. Okay, and usually we'd talk if there's a message here, but we've already said, heck no, there's no message here. If there was, they didn't finish talking about it. So before we head and get into a rate and wrap this up, I promised the Rage Master some uninterrupted time here to go through why this movie didn't work for him.
Okay, it's not just for me. It's just a lot of ink has been spilt about why it didn't work. And the boycotters will say it was all them. And journalists desperate to defend this will say it had nothing to do with it. Well, Scott, as you're fond of saying, they are both wrong and they're both right. Let's just look at it. There's three or four reasons I've identified. Let's look at, go back to one. The hype or lack thereof. So when you go back to when Solo was announced, most people weren't that excited about this. They liked the roguish background of Han Solo that they didn't know much, and it was appealing. So when told there's going to be a Solo movie, nah, nobody was really that into it. But then to add to that was coming off of The Last Jedi. See, Rogue One was safe because, well, it wasn't about any established character. And it was coming off of the nostalgic hit of Force Awakens. People were still high from that and would take anything Star Wars. After Last Jedi, a lot of people started to look at Force Awakens and go, some kept their opinions and others tempered it. And others went, whoa, wait a minute. It isn't original. You know, now that I'm watching it, it kind of isn't good at all, or I don't like it as much. And Rogue One didn't suffer for it because Rogue One was what it was, and it was riding the high of Episode 7. Solo was riding the low of Last Jedi. So you had a movie that people weren't that psyched about hearing to begin with, the controversy of Last Jedi. So you had a lower interest. Is that insurmountable? No, it's not. You can overcome that. But they didn't, because they didn't advertise. Now, that's probably in a large part because they had to reshoot the film, 70% of the film. And because of that, other things started getting out, like the fact that the movie had to get refilmed 70% of the way. And the fact that most people who are thinking, well, I don't know if you could fill Harrison Ford's shoes. Then you find out that the guy playing Solo is taking acting lessons on the set. Uh-oh. So let's see. I'm already riding low on Last Jedi. I kind of am not super psyched about a Solo movie to begin with, but then I find out they reshot most of the film and the guy who's playing Solo is taking acting lessons. I might just pass on this one. So then you get to movie day. Comes out. You have the casual Star Wars fan deciding to sit home. The average moviegoer deciding to sit home because of the first two mentioned reasons. And if you're thinking, oh, well, China would save it. Nah, Star Wars has never done well in China. For whatever reason, it has never done well in China. So you're falling back on your last thing, your safety net, the fandom, the ones that got Star Wars through Jar Jar Binks and the prequels, the ones that got them through Ewoks cartoons. These are the guys that'll save the movie. Don't worry if the casual Star Wars fan lost interest because of a Last Jedi fallout and bad press. We'll get the fandom will get us through it. The fandom will, what's that? The fandom's mad. They're boycotting. Boycotting Last Jedi. Boycotting Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams, calling them horrible names because some of them just leveled any criticism. Oh, right. So the movie, that lack of interest, what could have saved it, the safety net, wasn't there. This is a case of what Scott does mention in his rant about the creators antagonizing the customer. And I'm not, there is a toxic fandom. Don't get me wrong. I agree with Scott completely that there's a toxic fandom and a good portion of them were carrying on in the worst way. But then you get guys like me who just voiced my concerns about Last Jedi and I got lumped in with the racists and the bigots. Well, why should I go see your movie now? You can't just differentiate the difference between me and a guy that hates Rey just because she's lacking a Y chromosome. Okay, you want to paint that kind of a broad brush stroke? Have fun making movies without me. I understand. You don't want to make movies for me? Then I won't give you my money. And that's what happened. So even before this movie came out, before any of these criticisms could come out, you had that working against you. And I think that's a big reason all of these combinations, why it was not, it was kind of doomed to failure.
I've said this from the start. Disney didn't understand what they were buying. Disney does not understand this franchise. They didn't understand the base that this franchise was. It's not that this franchise is woman hating. It's not that this franchise is minority hating, that the base of this franchise is. Yes, there's only one real female character in the entire first trilogy. And there's only one really in the second trilogy that matters. Prequels, yeah. Of the prequels. Mm-hmm. The bottom line to it is what something I've said before. Star Wars is an American phenomenon that needs to hit hard for 6 or 7 years and then go away for a decade and a half. Star Wars from 77 to 83 took America by storm. And then it went away. And it went away for 15, 16 years. And it went away so long that when it came back in 1998, everyone was like, yeah, I mean, I don't care what this is. Yeah, it's a 2-hour movie on trade embargoes and Senate procedures. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to get to see Yoda again. Sweet. Young Obi-Wan, I am there. That Darth Maul guy looks really cool. He'll be cool to watch for 3-4. Oh, ooh, okay.
Well, especially,
I'm there. Episode 2, we got it. More Obi-Wan.
Especially considering we knew they were coming, because Lucas always said, I'm going to have to make these movies.
And then episode 3, I mean, I can tell you the only reason. I knew there were two things I was getting in episode 3. Like I said, there are two things you had to do in Solo, and you didn't do it. I knew I was getting Vader versus Obi-Wan. I knew I was getting the Emperor versus Yoda. And boy, did those two things deliver.
They delivered.
Absolutely. They saved the whole movie. They saved all the prequels. But Disney didn't understand. And then you let it breathe again. After 2003, 2005.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, whenever you let it breathe for another 11, 12 years and everyone thought it was gone. Force Awakens was a massive hit at $2 billion. The writing was on the wall when Rogue One came out and made half of that. And then The Last Jedi came out and made half of it. You didn't start losing the audience with Last Jedi. You started losing the audience with Rogue One. You continued to lose the audience with The Last Jedi. And the problem you really did there was now you took that section of the audience that you lost when you brought a social agenda into your film in a franchise where people don't want social agendas. I love a social agenda. It's why I love Star Trek. It's why I love what's going on in Star Trek Discovery. I love that they're tackling some of these ideas that are going on and they're out there championing some of these progressive ideals. I love Star Trek for that. Thank you for that. That's the franchise for that. Right, Star Wars is the franchise you go to get away from that discussion in society for a little while and just turn your brain off of it because you need to. And you have ham-fisted it into these movies since Rogue One. So now you've lost that audience. But with The Last Jedi, you killed off every single character that people cared about in the past. The only characters left are the droids and Chewbacca. We know there's no more Leia because, unfortunately, Carrie Fisher is no longer with us. Everyone that people cared about has died. What? So now you want me to come see a Han Solo backstory a couple months after you killed off Luke Skywalker and one of the worst? You turned Luke Skywalker into a coward who's hiding? Also, and you want me to come watch a Solo movie right now? Of course the fan base isn't interested. You've done everything you can do to annoy them.
Also, you already know how his story ends. He dies.
Right.
Well, and not only that, with the killing off of characters, the killing off wasn't the problem. It was, instead of passing the torch, you torched the past.
Yeah, you couldn't. You could have killed off one. Killing Han had a great death. The killing of Han was brilliant.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Okay. But you needed someone. And once you knew that Carrie Fisher couldn't be back to carry that torch with Leia to keep people interested with some of the old cast left, when you knew that the only characters remaining are the droids, Chewbacca and the Falcon from the original trilogy, you probably should have figured out something to do with Luke other than having him die a hero's death.
Yeah. I mean,
you have a problem. And I think, honestly, you had a fan base. The other thing you happened is Star Wars fatigue. I've said Star Wars is a movie that needs to rest. Part of its phenomenon is that it goes away for so long that when it comes back, it might be 15 years before I see another trilogy. It's been 15 years since I've seen this movie. I'm going to go see it.
The mouse doesn't know how to do that.
I don't know, but I'm not going to argue in favor of the fatigue one.
I got to make 200 pounds of sausage a day, and I'm going to make the sausage.
Yep. You know, the mouse wants its money. The mouse will get its money.
That's a nice argument put forward by Bob Iger to try to save face.
But it's also the Marvel. I don't know. To me, it's true. The Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, it's bloated and needs to end.
There are movies that I will just skip. I saw Captain Marvel because, well, one, the controversy around it, and two, it's coming out right before Avengers Endgame, and unlike Infinity War, I don't want to be being brought up to speed in the theater as to what I missed in Thor Ragnarok, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But the bottom line with these Marvel superhero movies is, I use Ant-Man and the Wasp as an example. I finally watched that. I'm glad I didn't watch it because it's a waste of time. And when I see that there's going to be, hey, look, there's going to be 3 superhero movies this year, I really don't have time to watch a concept like Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'll just watch something else. I think that's what's happening with Star Wars right now, too. There's been a ton of Star Wars movie, and it loses its novelty.
Yeah.
Especially when you haven't produced a good Star Wars movie since The Force Awakens. I will call The Force Awakens a good Star Wars movie. It wasn't great, but it was good. It was enjoyable. It was fun. You have produced things that the base itself, I'm still not sure on The Last Jedi. And Rogue One is a fine movie, but it's not a good Star Wars movie. It's a war story. You haven't produced a movie that the base likes since 2014? Was it 2014, 2015?
Was that it? I forget.
It's been a while.
I think it's back to like 2014 or 2015. You haven't produced a movie the base likes in a long time. What do you think they're going to do? All right. I think, Thomas, you have anything to add on that? If not, let's go to rate this movie and wrap it up.
All right.
All right. I will start this one. I'll give Mark the parting blow.
Okay. How are we rating it? How many Falcon or how many parsecs?
How many parsecs? I am going to rate this just as a movie. It is 7 parsecs out of 10. It is fun. It does a good job with the backstory. I don't feel like I wasted my life watching it. I don't hate it. I think that if there hadn't been the blowback from Rogue One and The Last Jedi, this movie would have went over much better with the base. Had this movie been released when Rogue One was, instead of when it was, I think it would have done much better. I think it would have cracked a billion, and I think Rogue One would have been the movie that tanked at the box office. I think this was a lot of blowback from Rogue One and The Last Jedi and the base being fatigued and staying away. It's not a great movie. It's not an excellent movie. It has its flaws. It's a train heist movie in the Star Wars universe that gives you a little bit of a backstory about Han Solo and has too much fan service. And that's why it's a 7 parsecs, because it's a lot of fluff. It's a lot of fan service, but it does some of the stuff it does well, which is lay the background for the Han Solo character. There are cool moments. It's nice to see the Falcon shiny and new. It's nice to get to see that Sabacc game finally. They did that okay. And even though the Kessel Run wasn't done well, at least you put it on screen.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to rate it 2-part for myself. I'm going to rate it as a movie just by itself if this is not in the Star Wars universe. And then I'm going to give it 6.5 parsecs as a movie. As you said, Scott, it was okay. It's not great. It's not bad. It's meh. But if I'm ranking it within the Star Wars universe, oh boy, does it suffer. I'm going to give it 3. It just does not succeed as a movie in the Star Wars universe. And because of that, it's why it's here. It's missed.
I give it a 3 or on a good day 4 bottom. It doesn't. And if you say evaluate it as a normal movie, well, with all its hackneyed writing, overblown references, contrived ideas, hackneyed premise, and horrible cuts. Okay. 3. I mean, what more do I need to say? I think I've mentioned everything. It was it better than Rogue One? I don't know. I'll give it this much. I'd rather watch that than Last Jedi.
It stinks.
If you said Rage, you can watch The Last Jedi or Solo. Solo. Don't even need to think about it.
Well, considering how much you hate the other one, I don't think that's a high compliment.
Exactly. No, but it says a ton about The Last Jedi.
It does.
That does.
I would, but it does also suck that I would rather watch Star Crash.
Oh, man. Okay. Ooh. That's not even, I can't take you seriously right now. Halt the flow of time. All right. Okay, that was a lot calmer than I thought this discussion was going to be. At the moment, I don't think we've fully decided what the topic for April is, but we'll get something out there updating everybody between now and then. If you have comments on this, you can email us at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can leave comments on our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Malady. If you like the podcast, leave us a 5-star review. Rage Master, what's left to do?
Stay sick, sickies.
No, the mouse says that we have to go watch Star Wars movies because it says Star Wars. See you next week.